Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we're joined by Patty Myers, who has created so far a two-part film series called Making a Killing, which exposes the hospital protocols that are sadly injuring and killing a huge number of people every year, not just in America, but also around the world. So Patty Myers joins us to talk about what inspired her to create this film series, how you can watch it, and what comes next. Welcome, Patty. It's great to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Mike, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share about my family's journey.
Absolutely. We appreciate your courage in doing this. And I know that you've gone through some very difficult years, I would say, in order to get to this point. But let's start back before you decided to make the film. What motivated you to do this? Because it took a lot of time, money, and effort to do this. So give us your story, please.
So my husband and I, we have a son with autism, and we have two nonprofits that help people with disabilities. And we have been advocates for years, helping families. And when my husband went in the hospital, I really trusted the medical community at that point. I asked questions. I just didn't take whatever they said, but I really did. And as I watched my husband suffer, honestly, and see how he was treated or not treated, I knew something bad was happening, way more than just, you know, his story. And basically, I ended up coming across a video, which is in my episode 2, of a guy that had taken his phone while he was in the hospital and tried to warn people that, he was being killed. And I thought, well, that's crazy. You know, I was in the midst of, you know, my own grief. But I remember thinking, I got to figure out what happened there. That was a hot mess. That was crazy after he died. And so ever since I watched Ray talk about how he was going to die soon and what they were doing to him or not doing to him, I knew that second I had to stand up. I didn't know really what that was going to be like. And I just thought, I have to tell Tony's story. And then there's other stories. I kept just reading more and more and more. And since the film, I've just been so many families begging me to keep telling the stories, keep standing up for them because they're not able to do it. And so that's what I'm doing.
Now this film, and by the way, the website is called makingakillingdoc.com. Doc is short for documentary. So makingakillingdoc.com. And that's where you can watch these episodes, by the way. And I agree with the phrase here, making a killing. And one of the things, Patty, that people have come to realize during the COVID years, and I've had attorneys as guests, and I've had medical experts as guests who testify to this, that many hospitals in America have become murder factories. And it's they know that they're doing it because they're getting incentives, they're getting extra payouts. If someone dies who's diagnosed with COVID, and then the hospital can earn, in some cases in California, up to $500,000 for killing someone who they say has COVID. Is that awareness now causing, you think, more people to understand what your film is talking about?
I certainly hope so. I know they billed over $500,000 for my husband alone, plus the bonus on top of that. The pressure to vent, he was in there almost 4 weeks, and the pressure to be vented when he was doing okay was relentless, and it started on at least day 5. It could have been earlier, but they wouldn't let me in. So,
what was your husband diagnosed with, if you don't mind me asking?
He was diagnosed with COVID when I dropped him off.
Okay.
So, and then there's a protocol that happens when that happens. And it's not just COVID sometimes, it's other diagnosis. As soon as you get the diagnosis of cancer, there's a protocol. So all these things have protocol and there's dollars, you know, attached to that. At the end, the last few days, the ICU doctor, head ICU doctor, came over to me to convince me he needed to be vented. And he said, listen, he's not going to make it. And you just need to do this. I would have vented him. This was the quote. I would have vented him when he was doing better. Who vents people when they're doing better? Vent is not like taking an aspirin.
Right.
You know, and they just belittled me and, you know, are you in the medical field? And just really tried to bully me, which they didn't know who I was, advocate, you know, family that we are. That just really ticked me off, to be honest. And it was like a red flag. Like, why are they trying to get rid of me? So, right. But at the end, he was like, he has to be vented. And then he started saying, well, I used to vent people and they made it. Now they're not making it. And I said, well, why are you pressuring my husband to be vented? And this is what he did.
Wow.
And then he goes, I'm doing what this was a quote. I'm doing what the FDA, the CDC, and this hospital has told me to do. And I said,
exactly.
Sir, that is like, what about do no harm? I'm relying on you as the professional. You've been trained. You're looking at every ounce of everything. And he just looks at me like, and I said, okay, so, because I was trying to fight for ivermectin again in the end, and I'll tell that if we have time, the short version of Tony's story. But at the end, I was trying to get ivermectin again. He was making fun of me. And then I said, okay, so if your wife is in this situation, are you not going to give her ivermectin? Are you just going to vent? And he's like, yep. And he just was like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, well, there's no emotion.
They're NPCs. I mean, these are like medical robots with a layer of human flesh on the outside. It's like a cyborg system surrounded by human flesh, right? From the Terminator. And that's what they do is they terminate people using algorithmic protocols, which is what your film is about. So they're given a list of executions to execute people in the hospital, and they follow the orders. I mean, these are like medical Nazis, I dare say. And that's, I know you're not saying that, but I would say that they're like medical Nazis, and they're just given orders here, kill these people. You know, we interviewed one person that was a whistleblower, or who had a recording of a whistleblower, where they were given instructions. I think it was a nurse. They were given instructions to kill everybody on a single floor of the hospital, that they were all supposed to be killed. And they followed instructions.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because, like, again, around day five, and it could have been earlier, but I wasn't allowed in. I mean, you could tell they'd given up on him. And he was at, you know, you have regular oxygen up to 15 liters, and then you go on high flow, you know, up to 100, and then it's supposed to be vent. That's kind of the protocol. And so he was on maybe 30% high flow, and they said to him, you're not going to make it. Right out. They just told him. I have texts from my husband just saying, they said there's no more meds. There's nothing more they could do. I'm not going to make what?
No, but you brought in, you know, about ivermectin and the hospitals withheld ivermectin from people. They withheld hydroxychloroquine and they withhold things like chlorine dioxide. They will never treat someone with chlorine dioxide or even just ivermectin, which is so safe and so effective. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that the protocol is designed to cause death, but that the withholding of things that could save the patient are also enforced through the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And this doctor, he didn't feel any sense of guilt or shame, huh?
Oh no. And in fact, so Tony's story at day five, I learned the word ivermectin. I didn't know much going into the hospital. I knew like maybe don't go to the hospital. People are dying, but that's pretty much all I knew. And so day five, I learned the word ivermectin. He was going down fast. Of course, after he gets the remdesivir, he goes downhill fast. And then
they put him on remdesivir.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
This is gonna help you.
Got it.
So. And then all his records, you know, this was after he died, but I just pulled all the kidney and the heart, and it is like directly right after the remdesivir, he went downhill. So
yeah,
long story, it took me 5 more days. So this would have been 10 days in the hospital. He would have had COVID like 2 weeks. And finally I asked for it since day 5 to 10, every day, made fun of, threatened to be asked to leave the hospital when I'm talking like this, you know. And then one time, that last day when I asked, it was the 5th day of asking. And I said, I need the doctor again. What do you need it for? And I was like, I just need the doctor. She goes, what do you need? I said, ivermectin. Oh, she's not going to do it. And then I just looked at her and I said, listen, he's going to be getting it today. I don't know, you, whoever's, it's going to happen just like that. And she goes, you need to calm down or you're going to be asked to leave. I said, oh no, we're not doing that either. I was like, so, because this, my husband at that day was 100% high flow, could not sit up, could hardly talk, could not eat. I mean, I knew where this was going.
Did you ever think about taking him out of the hospital?
Mm-hmm. I asked to do it hospice. I need to take him out hospice. And again, I only knew so much, but they immediately said, oh, no. He's never going to make it out of the hallway. And then I didn't know what to do. I mean, I didn't know what was right. I know that's, you know, crazy talk right now, but I didn't know it at the time. And then I said, well, I'll just get my own ambulance. I mean, I was, but every time I did that, they just came back with like, he's going to die. Like he's not going to make it to stand up or, you know, stuff like that. So and I,
it sounds like they almost were in essence, making him a prisoner of the hospital.
Hostage, exactly.
Right. A hostage. And now since your film has come out about this horrible situation that you experienced, how many people have you heard from that had a similar experience?
I mean, I would say at least hundreds, at least. And a lot of nurses, actually. I mean, a lot of family members, but I would say it's probably a quarter nurses that have emailed me and said, please, I had one and I had printed. And she's like, pick me. You know, she wants to be telling her story. And that's not even about COVID. You know, that's about, you know, dialysis centers and stuff. And these are nurses 20, 30 years. They're not like 2 years.
Yeah, a lot of nurses, they woke up to what was going on. And many of them refused to participate. And many of them refused to get vaccinated. And some of them sued the hospitals. And some won, by the way, won those lawsuits. The nurses, you know, it's fascinating. The nurses seem to be more capable of thinking for themselves than the doctors.
It's so true. And I think it goes back to my title. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it. I think it's all about the money. Because at the end of the day, and that's what we talk about in episode 2 a little bit. I mean, when you know it's wrong, when you're making a choice to stay, that's pretty sad.
No kidding. But a lot of nurses decided to leave those facilities and set up something else or be part of something else. Some changed their careers. Right. So I'm done. I'm done with nursing. I'm not going to participate in the mass killing of people.
Yeah.
And a few doctors said that as well too, right? So there are heroes in this story of people who made the right choice, but there sure are a lot of villains at the same time. And those villains are still there operating in those facilities, making a killing. Let me ask you this. People can go to your website to access the film, but the two episodes, are they free to watch right now?
They are free right now, yes.
Okay. And then how do you fund this? Did you just accept donations?
Yes, I got some donations for episode 2. And then actually the first film, I don't know if you've heard of the COVID money that they give families for funerals, but that's what I used to do the first film. I didn't want to have any part of that money as far as helping myself or, you know, but I wanted to really, like, if you're going to give me that, then this is what I'm going to use that for.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's, I think, the best use of it is to help try to warn others and maybe save some lives. But what would you say to somebody who's looking at this and yet they don't know what to do? Maybe their question is, well, where am I supposed to go? If not the hospital, you know, that's going to be a common question mm-hmm. because a lot of people don't know much about how health works, frankly.
Yeah. Well, that's the good news. I think coming out of a lot of people standing up is that, whether they're opening clinics or there's more naturopathic doctors. And that's what I'm trying to do recently is I get that question asked a lot. What do I do then? And so I'm trying to, I put a resource tab on the website. And we're trying to put the people that doctors and nurses that are doing the right things, that are talking to their patients, that are letting them have medical freedom and not just stick to a protocol box, especially those that kill. So that's kind of what we need to, stand together and say, we're not doing this. We are not going to promote and help you kill people. Because when you go to the hospital currently, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're helping them stay in that deadly box.
Yeah, good point. You're bringing more money to them so they can continue to fund their mass murder operation. And I think even before COVID, you know, the cancer industry is a mass murder operation. They pump people full of poison, poison that causes their hair to fall out, their muscles atrophy, their immune system shuts down. They vomit, they lose body mass, and they become, I mean, let's face it, chemotherapy causes cancer, right? Mm-hmm. But that's been going on for a very long time, and that's the protocol.
Right. And in fact, my husband's brother was diagnosed with stage 4. You have 2 years to live, chemo forever. And he went on it for about 6 months, and it was just like watching my husband. It was the same thing. He went in the hospital, double pneumonia. I said, oh, my dear, the treatment's killing him, just like with Tony. And long story short, a nurse through my documentary that I did not know at all, she helped me look at his records, and we got him on vitamin, different treatments that are natural from the ground, eating good, no sugar. There is no cancer to be found. He gets scans every 3 months, and there's nothing. This was a guy that's supposed to die, I think, about 2 more months. And I can't wait for that day to come. He and I have said that. And that's what we do want our third episode. That's what we want to focus on is the deadly treatment and the scare tactics they use. Oh, same with COVID.
It's horrible.
Like they said, okay, you're not going to do chemo. It's going to go to your brain and you're going to die quicker. What?
Yeah, they do. But then those cancer doctors, they never tell you that they make money off the chemo.
Oh, big time.
Right. Talk about conflicts of interest. Talk about fraud. Frankly, just marketing fraud. You know, the FTC should be shutting all these down. But they'll lie to you. They'll say, if you don't start today, you have to start chemotherapy today or you're going to die in 6 months or something.
Yeah, they don't want you to think.
Right.
They don't want you. They want you to go and they want you to rely on this treatment that they, you know, and think about it. What he told my brother-in-law affected him mentally way more than physically.
Ah.
And what happened with my husband in the hospital, the reason he died, yes, their treatment sucked and killed him. But I really feel like more than anything, they broke him down. You know, he emailed the governor and said, I've seen too many body bags past my room for comfort. Help me.
Wow.
This is a guy that all he saw and heard was death. And they were like, yeah, you're not going to make it.
Wow.
So he didn't think he was going to make it, I don't think. I really don't. you know.
It's kind of psychological warfare against mm-hmm. the patients too.
Yeah.
Well, and since the hospital, it really is a murder factory in many ways, then of course you're going to see a lot of other people die around you if you're in the hospital, because they're being murdered in many mm-hmm. cases. I'm not saying in every case, but
right.
certainly in many cases. Now, there are obviously caring physicians and caring surgeons mm-hmm. and good hospitals and good clinics that exist out there. And I do want to give credit to those. There are amazing nurses that try to help patients heal. But how does a person know whether they're going to a death factory or a center where people actually care about you? That's the thing. There's no way to know.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I always say that I'm afraid desperately if I needed to be sent to the hospital for some emergent care. I'm definitely not going there for anything. But yeah, you don't know, because it's not about the doctors and nurses anymore. It's about administration making the rules, because it's about money. It's about their budget and whatever. And, you know, I hear so much during that this 3-year window of poor us, meaning hospitals, poor us, we lost so much money. If that's the case, then why are there urgent cares and they're left and right? It's they're coming up, popping up in nursing homes. And if they were so poor and, you know, malnourished as a hospital, I don't think they could afford $1 million and $1 billion new facilities.
Yeah.
So
no, they're not poor. You don't see hospitals declaring bankruptcy across the country. You see them getting massive government funds.
Well, I went to Sarasota Hospital because they did let's look at how we did COVID treatments and how we did that. But it was an insider study, you know, with their own people. And all they did was sit there and say that we're 65, whatever the number was, something million in deficit. And it's like a joke. I mean, they made so much money on this. And we talk about it in film two, where the only way for them to do the protocol was to throw money at them. I mean, they lost a lot of money with their elective surgeries and all kinds of stuff that they had to stop, right? So in order for them to keep on going, I mean, they had to receive all this money to do this deed, I call it. Like my husband's story real quick, Mike, is after day 10, I got ivermectin. A doctor said yes, finally. I worked hard on that. And so he had it for about 3 days. And I want to show you a picture quick. So this was my husband the day a day or two before he got it, couldn't sit up, let me show first. This is my husband. I usually like to start interviews showing my beautiful husband. That's his life, right? Mm-hmm. So this is day 6, I believe. And then look at this after 2 days of ivermectin. This is back to my normal guy.
Uh-huh.
You know? So, and then this, look at this picture. Do you notice anything with this picture?
What do you mean besides the fact that he shaved?
Shaved, and what else is he doesn't have on his nose?
Yeah, what was that? Oxygen
supply?
He does
not have oxygen. Yeah. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he's like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
This is 3 days from your dying. You have to be vented on this one.
Uh-huh.
You know? And then this one, this day, they said you're going home in a day or two.
Really?
He even texted my daughter like a selfie, and he says, I'm healthy. FYI, I'm healthy.
Uh-huh. And that was ivermectin.
Ivermectin.
So then what happened?
They didn't give it credit at all. They just casually 3 days ago, you're going to die. You got to be vented. And then, hey, you're going to go home in a day or two. And then he always has shortness of breath in the early mornings. And you just had to kind of talk him down. But this morning when he was, you know, calling for the nurse, they weren't there because they were at lunch. So then he had to start screaming for somebody. And the anxiety and everything, and it was a full emergent, a bunch of people. And then they sent him to the ICU and they stopped the ivermectin.
Oh, wow.
And then we asked for it every day, but 10 days later he died.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So his story is such a, that's murder.
That is
murder. It took me a while to face that, but that's just murder. When you, and I look at his kidneys, I look at all the records, and it was like, all his numbers were like this. He gets the ivermectin and things went like that. And then they had the gall to put in the record the day after that emergency that the ivermectin was proven not to work. And then they put in there that it's not approved by the FDA. That's a lie too. I like to, part of this documentary is to give people the truth, the right information.
Yes.
So they can be empowered before they're sick. I don't care, COVID, cancer, it doesn't matter. A lot of this stuff they tell you is just lies.
It is. And it's not just incompetence, right? It's actual deliberate murder.
Yes.
That's what people need to recognize. Because, you know, I've been critical of Big Pharma and the Western medical system for 20 years. But a lot of people used to say, well, it's an honest mistake. They just don't know about nutrition. Mm-hmm. These days, no. They're killing people on purpose. They're following orders to kill.
There's no right to try. You know, because, okay, let's say they're like, okay, maybe they forgot that. I used to joke. Maybe they forgot that medicine wasn't working. Wife's asking every day. Patient is asking every day. I mean, and they are like hard too. They were hard before I got it approved, but it was almost like they really got ticked off that he got that ivermectin. And I don't have anything to prove with this, and I'm still searching for it. But I feel like if he got something off of the protocol, did they not get all the money that they were supposed to? Is that what that was about?
Yeah, probably.
Because when a patient is like, oh, my dear, I was just going home in a day or two, and only because of that one medicine that you've added, wouldn't you? I didn't know what I was doing. I was just a wife, and I went in there and said, he needs it. He not only needs it, but he needs more of it, because that's the only thing that's actually been working, like major working, not just like little bit. This guy was asking for Chipotle. He's sitting up. He's smiling. I'm healed. And then they said no more.
The thing is, I mean, I've used ivermectin probably dozens of times over the last few years. And I don't even bother using prescription ivermectin because it's a ripoff price. I just buy the agricultural ivermectin because, you know, I live on a ranch. And I just use a pipette and I just take the volume that I need and put it in my smoothie. Actually, I just drop it right in my smoothie and I just drink it. And the thing is, you could buy ivermectin online, and they still won't allow your husband to have it in the hospital. How insane is that? Like, it's okay to give ivermectin to a goat, but not to your spouse?
Mm-hmm. Well, I met with the CEO and COO, and they said, it's not science-based, so we're still there.
Right. Follow the
and
science.
Then what they do is shut you up. They never want to have a conversation, right? So I said, well, let's talk about remdesivir and ivermectin. Let's talk about the studies that you're reading and I'm reading, the same studies. How can we have a difference of opinion? That doesn't even make sense. And then he goes, we're not going to agree. Let's just move on to something else. That's what they do. They don't want to keep on discussing it. And that's just infuriating to me.
So having gone through this, if you had to visit some kind of medical facility now, what would you choose to do? Or do you already have connections with naturopathic physicians or alternative medicine?
Yes, yeah. That's where I'm headed. In fact, I had a crazy story. Short version is a friend of a friend, elderly mom was needing help. She was having some hallucinations and asked for my help. I went over there. It turned into us going to the ER, which I was PTSD, and I didn't think it was the right thing, but I didn't know. So I went there, and literally this lady is not coherent, and they gave me a little pad like this big. I just told them I hardly know this lady. And they said, I need you to sign consent for treatment. And I said, what? First of all, there's no information that I'm signing. I'm just signing a little like iPad. It doesn't even have words on it. It's just empty. And I'm just supposed to sign. I said, sir, can you just print it out for the lady so I can read? He goes, I can't. It's on the computer over here. He goes, just do it. Really, like, so I'm like, oh my dear, this is crazy over here. This is nuts.
Yeah.
And this is a person that's going to the ER that mostly likely is not doing well. They're not in the mood to like ask these kind of questions. Right. And they know it. Right. So God bless. I'm not sure what the lady signed. I told her, I said, they're not giving you what it is that you're signing. They're saying it's consent to treatment. And she, of course, you know, she, and I was like, oh my dear.
No, but they get you when you're in a very vulnerable mental state, right? Mm-hmm. Emotional state, you're fearful, you're panicked, and they exploit that.
It's true.
They exploit that. They get you to sign away all your right, you know, even a right to sue for malpractice. Exactly. You know, there's something hidden in there. You agree not to sue. And they're basically like, oh yeah, you're dying, but we're not going to treat you unless you agree to all these terms that are outrageous and might even violate state law, by the way.
Yeah, it's so true. And that's some of the message that I want to get out. So before people are sick, before they don't feel well and they're in a state of vulnerability, that they have this knowledge, you know, and it's still going to be hard because it's different for a lot of, it was different for me. I mean, I went there, I dropped my husband off to the death chamber because I literally saw him suffocate over a period of 4 weeks while the United States of America, I live in Florida, one of the freest states ever, and it's happening everywhere. It's not just in certain places.
I mean, good point. Yeah, so all this happened in Florida?
Yes.
Well, I know Governor DeSantis is fighting for your right to have the medicine you want in Florida. DeSantis has taken quite a stand against the abuses by big pharma and big hospitals, at least as I understand it. But, you know, look what he's up against.
Yeah. I mean, he right away came out with the, you know, the visitation thing, which was good because that's, you know, I shouldn't even be saying, Mike, that I was grateful I was with my husband when he died because a lot of families weren't. But that shouldn't be a, like, wow, I was so grateful. Like,
it should that be should a, be the you first should always thing have the right.
Yeah. So I think I can't even imagine what families had to do, whether FaceTime or no FaceTime. I can't even. I mean, that's just, and it's not about me. It's just more about them, you know, the patient that's suffering. That's just, that can't happen.
Well, Patty, I agree with you. And we honor your courage and your effort and your heart in doing this, in making this film. Let me give out your website again, makingakillingdoc.com. And there you can scroll down and you can watch the episodes here. And you can learn about Patty's story and her husband here and how all of that went down and you know, the horrors of the medical murder system, which is also carrying out medical violence now against children, by the way. And I know this isn't the focus of your film, Patty, but you know, there's all across the country, at least in certain states, they're now mutilating children and calling it, you know, gender affirming care. I mean, it's unbelievable the hell they're going to put those kids through. Mm-hmm. And they call it medicine.
Oh, yeah. It's always under it's their narrative. It's always their narrative. And if you say anything against it, too, then you're discriminating. And that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And again, I know that's not the focus of your film, but it is, it's related to medical violence, just across the board. There's a lot of medical violence that takes place. And, you know, whatever happened to the Hippocratic Oath, right? First, exactly. Do no harm. Now it's like first maximize money for murder. You know, that seems to be you know, they have like dollar signs in their eyeballs, ka-ching, ka-ching. When the people come in, they're like, oh, more money.
Exactly. That's what that's the way I felt a little bit of I felt two things in there. The culture was just death.
Yeah.
I mean, not literally people were dying. It was just, it's hard to explain, like when you were in there every day, what that was like. All you heard was, I'm so tired from the staff. Oh, we've been so overworked. We don't have enough people. And I thought, oh my dear, look at Tony. He's trying to breathe through a straw for weeks upon weeks, you know. There right. was no compassion. I mean, literally in 4 weeks, I could count the number of nurses or staff that I felt like, you know, said my husband's name, looked at him, instead of just looking at a number and then out the door. So,
well,
we have to do better.
We have That's to do better. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and the point is that, you know, people might say, well, look, yeah, the nurses were overworked. Yeah. Well, they wouldn't be if they let patients have ivermectin and they could start sending mm-hmm. them home healthy. Mm-hmm. Right. And then your burden of work goes down as a nurse or a doctor because, you know, 75% of the patients are fine now. That's the thing. They create the burden by denying exactly. the ivermectin.
Yep.
And then yep. they complain about how hard they have to work. Well, if you weren't making everybody sick, you wouldn't be working so long of hours, you know?
Well, even at the end, too, when he was, you know, the ICU doctor, he's not going to make it. And I said, okay, let's just say he's not going to make it. He's texting me. It's been like an hour, 45 minutes to get ice. And that's all that's helping him. And he's like, oh, we have a lot of emergencies. I mean, this is his response to a wife saying, okay, I think he's going to die. I'm with you now. But could you just get him ice and water? He's like, nope.
Wow.
I mean, that's exactly how it was. Those are just some examples. But,
you know, I'm really glad you made this film, and I'm really glad you're bringing all this up. But I got to say, you know, the healthcare system is better in Russia and that's Cuba. Sad. And Taiwan, by the way, you know, because I lived in Taiwan. The healthcare system is so much better in Taiwan. Mm. And in America, it's really among the very worst in the world. It's a death trap. But look, let me just give out your website one more time. Encourage people to watch it. We'll wrap this up for today. But it's makingakillingdoc.com is the website to go watch these two films. Spread the word. Share the links and so on, and make sure that Patty's story gets told everywhere, because this is what's necessary. This needs to get out to help change the future of our broken death cult healthcare system. It is a death cult. As you witness, Patty, you yeah. walk in, it's like a death cult. It's crazy. Yeah. Any final thoughts on this interview today?
I think I just want to challenge people to watch it, to share it, because I don't want it to be you. And I didn't think it would be my family, but I'm living it. And I have nothing to gain from this. I'm just a wife that lost her husband for no good reason. Yeah. He should be here. And he had the right medicine, and they chose to stop it. And that could happen to you. So be informed, talk to your legislators, make this change, go to doctors that do listen, that do want to hear from you and have a conversation. So,
well said, Patty. And also stockpile some ivermectin, folks, because you never exactly. know when they're going to try to ban that.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Patty, your courage, your bravery really shines through. And we thank you for your efforts and for having that courage to speak out and to share this painful experience with the world in the hopes that others may not have to suffer like you and your family have. So thank you so much.
Right. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. We appreciate your time, Patty, and God bless you, and prayers to you and your family.
And thank you so much.
Absolutely. For those watching, of course, as always, feel free to repost this interview. Please do. Share it with somebody who needs to hear this and see this. And share the website, makingakillingdoc.com, so that other people can see these documentaries. And you may save a life, or more than one. Because, folks, this isn't over. This is not the last pandemic we're going to experience. I believe there's another one coming. I believe it's a plandemic. It's planned. And the protocol in the hospitals is a murder protocol. So even if people made it through the first wave of this, if they don't get informed, they may not make it through the second wave. And that could be you or someone you love. So get informed now, share this information, share this documentary, wake people up, save lives, and help protect humanity against these medical murderers that operate with impunity in our hospitals today. Thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com and the publisher of naturalnews.com. God bless you all. Take care. Speaking of avoiding exposure to toxins, by the way, today's interview is brought to you by our clean lab-tested foods at healthrangerstore.com. And I've got a little bit of an assortment on my desk here today just to show you some of the clean foods that we have. They're lab tests. We've got whey protein, raw cashews, freeze-dried organic blueberries. We've got clean chlorella, which is actually what got me started in testing foods for heavy metals. And we've also got organic kale. And almost everything that we sell is organic, and everything is laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology. And this is just a small sample right here. If you really want clean food and superfoods, and also snacks and instant meals and storable food, all kinds of things like that, go to healthrangerstore.com. And on the website, you're going to find an incredible assortment of, well, cacao nibs here, and then pea protein powder. And here's why people love it. Monk fruit extract, lots of things. Seven Treasures mushroom powder and capsules. I mean, it just goes on and on. There are so many amazing products, hundreds to choose from for health and nutrition, personal care, cleanliness, home care, you know, preparedness, so much more. Check it out and help support this program by shopping at healthrangerstore.com. A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.